But I, you know, again, I would, the parallel here is between two peoples facing occupation, two peoples trying to secure their own rights and self-determination. That's not to say the two situations are identical in all senses, but I do appreciate the sentiments expressed in that letter.
Matt Dutz, want to thank you so much for being with us, Executive Vice President of the Center for International Policy, former foreign policy advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders. As we wrap up, we want to wish a very happy birthday to Diana Pera, and congratulations to our crew member, Matt Ealy, and his partner, Zara. Welcome to the world, Zyron Carliz Bonola Ealy. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Gesder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkaf, Tamari, our studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Sanji Lopez, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, striking teachers block off a road, singing and chanting outside the superintendent's home in Portland.
We shouldn't have to fight to get safe and healthy buildings free of rodents and mold.
A lawsuit takes aim at a proposed logging operation in Oregon, and Oregon Senator Ron Wyden's targeting tax cheats. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, November 9th, 2023. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Striking teachers showed up en masse outside the Northwest Portland condo of Portland School Superintendent Guadalupe Guerrero. So many of them crowded in this afternoon, they shut down Northwest 11th at Gleason with speeches, chants, and songs.
We shouldn't have to fight to get safe and healthy buildings free of rodents and mold. We shouldn't have to fight to be fully staffed. To get students the mental health support they need. We shouldn't have to fight for reasonable class sizes. We shouldn't have to fight to get students their federally guaranteed special education program. But if it's a fight they want, then it's a fight they're going to get. Our students deserve.
Yeah!
One day longer,
one day stronger.
And there's no turning back because our fight is necessary, our fight is righteous, and we will win!
Performance. You might have already seen this, but this time we got a beat. This is a special song done by our own executive board, Beyond You.
And y'all, make sure you fill out this vote of no confidence before you leave. All right, DJ Green, let's go ahead and play that track, please.
It's now day 7 of the strike. Some Portland teachers talked about why they're on the picket lines on the Oregon Education Association podcast.
The time is now. The money is here now. Our students can't wait. Our students deserve high-quality public education.
We need safe schools. We're here for the kids. I want to do the best I can to meet their needs, and our caseloads are unfeasible. Like, what the district is asking from us, it's not okay. I don't have enough plan time. I don't have enough resources. It's not safe. I'm exhausted, and I want the best for our students.
Our students deserve high-quality public education, and our teachers deserve the funding and support necessary to give students that.
The school district says it's continuing negotiations with the teachers' union today through Sunday. Some conservation groups are also protesting in Oregon. As Eric Tegedoff tells us, they filed a lawsuit trying to stop a logging project proposed near Eugene.
Cascadia Wildlands, Oregon Wild, and Willamette Riverkeeper are challenging the U.S. Bureau of Land Management's authorization of the 4,600-acre Big League logging project. The groups say the agency failed to take a hard look at the project's impacts under the National Environmental Policy Act. Peter Jensen with Cascadia Wildlands says logging will hurt species in the region.
Those watersheds have critical habitat and are important watersheds for Willamette River spring Chinook salmon. And there's also forests within this region that have critical habitat for northern spotted owls.
In its assessment, the BLM concluded the project would have no significant impact on the environment. Jensen says the project is located on one of the last healthy pockets of forest in this heavily logged area.
There's some deep concern among our organizations that if you're toying with the last percentages of healthy forest in a watershed, small acreages can mean a lot for protected species as well as other critical resource values.
The conservation groups also say the agency failed to take into account the impacts of the 2020 Holiday Farm fire on the region. Defenders of the logging project say logging and clearing the forest will decrease the intensity of wildfires in the future. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, the chairman of the Finance Committee, held a hearing about tax schemes he says that ultra-wealthy Americans are using.
This Congress, the Senate Finance Committee, has investigated a number of tax schemes that very wealthy, with the help of armies of high-priced tax lawyers and accountants, are using to pay virtually no federal tax for years on end. We're going to examine one strategy called buy, borrow, and die. Those three words have an enormous impact from the standpoint of taxes. Here's how it works. A corporate raider buys a business. Then they borrow against its growing, untaxed value to fund an extravagant lifestyle. Everything from super yachts to luxurious vacations, expensive art deals, you name it. It just goes up and up in value while not paying a dime in taxes. And when they die, the assets are passed to the kids, often entirely tax-free, and this cycle I've described just continues. Now let's contrast buy, borrow, die against the tax system mandated for everybody else in America. If you're a nurse or a firefighter living in Philomath, Oregon, you're required to pay taxes out of every paycheck. Working people don't get to play by the same rules as billionaires. They don't get to call up an accountant every time they don't feel like paying taxes. Right now, the average billionaire can wriggle their way to paying 8% as a tax rate, while the nurse or a firefighter making $45,000 is paying a 22% tax on their wages. How is that fair? Americans overwhelmingly believe it's not fair. So it's time to look to solutions that restore fairness to the tax code while still rewarding success. Success is what America is all about, and we want to reward it. That's what our country's founded on. That's the idea that everybody, let me emphasize that, everybody's got a chance to get ahead. Fortunately, there's a solution that achieves both fairness and economic growth. It's called mark-to-market, and here's the kicker. There's already a version of mark-to-market in the federal tax code. So what that means, colleagues, is we've got a blueprint right in front of us to use as a model for mark-to-market provisions that would apply to billionaires. Put simply, mark-to-market would require billionaires to pay tax every year, just like everybody else. Buy, borrow, die is the primary mechanism billionaires use to avoid taxes. If left unchecked, You're inviting more gaming into the system. Ending buy, borrow, die is the best way to ensure that billionaires pay their fair share. Tax laws just don't apply to billionaires in the same way they do to everybody else. They're optional for billionaires, where everybody else's tax rules are mandatory. It's time to close these loopholes and make sure that those at the very top are paying taxes on their income as it's earned, like everybody else. Now, I'll close with this. Our finance team and I have been fighting tax injustices throughout this session. We investigated crooked Swiss bankers who are hiding wealthy Americans' income. $34 billion in unpaid taxes from millionaires who just don't feel like even filing a tax return. Tax dodging schemes between Leon Black and Jeffrey Epstein. And Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's wealthy buddy secretly forgiving a massive private loan. Americans deserve a tax system that's both fair and encourages success. My hope is that this could be bipartisan. The invention of Roth IRAs, for example, was bipartisan. A Republican idea, Chairman William Roth, helped working Americans save for the future and get ahead. And Chairman Roth, when you read the documents, always talked about being there for the people of modest means. And my friend, Senator Carper, of course, remembers Chairman Roth. But that's what the Roth IRA was about. It was for people of modest means. Now the ultra-wealthy are abusing these to shield their vast fortunes from federal tax. It's time to end this exploitation of current tax laws and use the funds, that portion that is way, way, way up at the top for a handful, use that money to help families. For example, it could be used to get a jump start on child savings accounts, something that our colleague, Senator Bob Casey, has been working on for years. So I've laid out just a few of the endless ways the super wealthy avoid paying their fair share, and I'll close with a gut punch. Everything I have described is legal. Everything. Perfectly legal. And I just know when I go home and I have a town meeting, I've had 1,060 of them, and I say that, people are just boiling. All that stuff is legal, Ron? Yep, all legal. And that's why people feel the deck is stacked against the working families. Wealth continues to build up in the hands of the fortunate few, and so many are left behind. Over one-third of American families do not have the cash on hand to pay for a $400 emergency. Meanwhile, during the pandemic, when families were forced to make tough choices between paying rent and buying groceries, billionaires increased their wealth by over $1 trillion. So, time to set aside business as usual. There's growing support, in my view, and demand for solutions that restore fairness to the tax code, level the playing field for working families, and promote success. I want to close by saying you can only have a successful economy if you have a tax code that treats everybody fairly. Just that simple. It's past time to close the gap between those at the top and everybody else. I look forward to working with my colleagues on the committee. It's been a busy week for the Finance Committee. Senator Crapo deserves enormous credit for yesterday. And we got a 26-0 vote on a really landmark health care bill to rein in these middlemen. And you'll probably hear we have some differing opinions here today, but I just want people to understand that I so appreciate Senator Crapo's willingness to debate these issues and find common ground where we can, which is quite often.
And that was Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. Meantime, Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray, who chairs the Appropriations Committee in charge of spending, held a hearing about emergency funding to fight fentanyl. She spoke to Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra and Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas.
Making sure synthetic opioids like fentanyl do not cross our borders is really important, and I know the administration is focused on this. It ramped up its efforts and conducted successful operations that have resulted in an additional 10,000 pounds of fentanyl seized over a two-month period. That's roughly a 17% increase above the preceding months. But seizing those drugs alone will not solve the problem for communities that are really ravaged by this crisis. Talk to us about the additional funding through the HHS will address the harm our communities are facing.
Madam Chair, there's not a state or not a community in America that doesn't need more assistance to tackle the opioid crisis, now driven mostly by fentanyl. Some 70% of these overdoses as a result of opioids are really now driven by fentanyl. We need to do much more, they will tell you. We can help with the prevention and the treatment. Secretary Mayorkas, I know we'll talk about the interdiction, but without the help, we're going to lose Americans. We know it, and we're doing everything we can for making naloxone more available to people to save lives, but also working with those on the ground who've been saving lives from day one. We want them to have the resources they need.
Thank you. And Secretary Mayorkas, what will the president's supplemental request allow you to do to stop fentanyl from entering our country?
Chair Murray, it will assist us significantly in our interdiction efforts. We already have done an extraordinary job. The men and women of U.S. Customs and Border Protection and Homeland Security Investigations have engaged in a number of operations, Operation Blue Lotus, Operation Artemis, which is surging our personnel and our technological resources to the ports of entry where the majority of the fentanyl is smuggled into our country. We are working with our international partners. The $1.3 billion that the supplemental request calls for will assist us with additional personnel, additional technological resources, and the ability to work with our international partners to really drive an encompassing approach to our interdiction efforts.
And that was Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. Then it's KBOO News In Depth. Ken Jones interviews the musical director of the Portland Youth Philharmonic about their upcoming 100th season. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airways. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of 37 degrees. Tomorrow's weather is expected to be cloudy but dry with a daytime high of 52. Today in history. On this date in 1965, a Catholic Workers Movement member, Roger Allen Laporte, set himself on fire in front of the United Nations building in protest of the Vietnam War. Our quote of the day is from American astrophysicist Carl Sagan, who was born on this day in 1934. He said, quote, "For small creatures such as we, the vastness is bearable only through love." There are only 3 states left that do not allow the medical use of cannabis: Idaho, Kansas, and Nebraska. Now, as Deborah Van Fleet reports, there's a push to put medical marijuana on the ballot in Nebraska.
When it comes to getting the legalization of medical cannabis in front of Nebraska voters, supporters hope the third time's the charm. Nebraska, Idaho, and Kansas are the only remaining states that have no provisions for medicinal use of cannabis. People report medical cannabis helps with a number of conditions, including epilepsy, MS, chronic pain, and the side effects of cancer treatment. Krista Eggers is campaign manager for Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana's ballot initiative. She says her son's epileptic seizures are only partially controlled with medications, which can cause significant side effects. While acknowledging that medical cannabis isn't a cure-all, Eggers says every day she talks with people it helps.
But are there situations in which it is truly nothing short of a miracle? Absolutely. It is bringing relief to children like my son all over the United States, all over the world, in other countries where this has been used and accepted for so long.
One research study of more than 3,000 patients concluded medical cannabis treatment may be associated with improvements in health-related quality of life among patients with a range of health conditions. Opponents tend to view marijuana in any form as a dangerous drug for both individuals and society. Eggers says they fully expect some well-funded opposition similar to what the prior ballot campaigns faced. For example, she points to the opposition of former Nebraska head football coach Tom Osborne, who claims that recreational marijuana caused some of his players to become less motivated.
To compare giving my child an oil under his tongue to stop him from seizing and what that would mean in his life to a college-age student who is playing football on a scholarship and decided to use marijuana recreationally, those are very, very different situations.
Marcy Reed's son has epileptic seizures that are fairly well controlled right now, but she worries about what will happen as he reaches puberty. She said some people seem uninformed about medical cannabis. leading to questions such as whether she'd allow her 10-year-old son to smoke it.
They had no idea that it came in oils and lotions and gummies. I also have told somebody, Google Vimpat and the side effects and read up on medical cannabis, and you tell me which one you would give your child.
Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana has until July 3, 2024 to complete their signature gathering campaign. They encourage people who support the cause to consider collecting petition signatures from family and friends over the holidays. I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
It's been 1 month now since the Israel-Gaza conflict began. Minnesota Supreme Court allows Trump on the primary ballot, and dissatisfaction rises over proposed government spending cuts. With more of the stories that impact our democracy, here's today's edition of 2023 Talks.
While many Americans and those in the West were asleep in their beds, innocent Israeli men, women, and children were ripped from theirs. They awoke to the sounds of indiscriminate missile attacks, gunfire, and the screams of their neighbors and friends.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is marking a month since the Israel-Gaza conflict began by talking about the 1,400 Israelis killed. More than 10,000 Palestinians have reportedly been killed by Israel's assault on Gaza in response. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has constantly refused calls for a ceasefire, arguing it would benefit Hamas. U.S. officials are urging Hamas to release the 240 people taken hostage, saying a ceasefire can't happen without that. Several family members of Itai Raviv are among those being held.
Releasing them should be the top priority of the entire world, should be the number one thing that everyone discusses. Anyone who believes in human rights, anyone who advocates for human rights, for humanity, for justice, should solve this issue.
Opinions among Americans seem split, with many, including some Jews, saying Israel's attacks amount to genocide against Palestinians. And that division has reached Congress. The House has approved a censure of Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib for her condemnation of Israel.
The cries of the Palestinian and Israeli children sound no different to me. What I don't understand is why the cries of Palestinians sound different to you all.
Tlaib says President Joe Biden's support of Israel will cost him Arab and Muslim support in 2024. Meanwhile, Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs of California sought to censure Florida Republican Brian Mast for saying Palestinian civilians are not innocent in this war.
Whereas Representative Brian Mast's refusal to distinguish innocent Palestinians from Hamas terrorists is false, misleading, dehumanizing, dangerous, and unbecoming of a member of Congress.
Jacobs' motion was dropped before it could come to a vote. Minnesota's Supreme Court dismissed a lawsuit to keep former President Donald Trump off the state's primary ballot, but similar 14th Amendment suits are still alive in other states. Political scientist David Sturrock says it's not clear if courts would take that kind of step.
The courts generally err on the side of allowing voters to have choices. They're reluctant to tell voters or election officials, no, you can't include a candidate's name on the ballot.
Some Republicans in Congress are again discussing using federal budget deadlines to force sharp reductions to a host of social programs like SNAP for women, infants, and children. David Nimeroff with Harmony Healthcare of Long Island says the cuts they want are substantive.
From what I understand, it is not a scalpel and just a little bit here and there. It is literally moving, you know, they used to get a fresh vegetables from about $25 to $11 a week. I mean, it's significant cuts.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
A new statue is unveiled at California's Capitol, and a Montana organization hosts events for Native American Heritage Month. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
In California, hundreds gathered at the state capitol for the dedication of a Miwok leader statue to replace the one of Catholic missionary Junipero Serra. Christina Onnested has more.
Tribes indigenous to the Sacramento area, including Pomo and Miwok, gathered with California state lawmakers to unveil the new statue at Capitol Park of Miwok leader William Bill Franklin. Jesus Tarango is a tribal chair of Wilton Rancheria.
It is an important step in telling an honest account of what happened on this land. As you have heard, the man portrayed in this statue is a Miwok Anishinaan leader, William Bill Franklin. His life epitomized the strength, honor, and commitment of California Indian people. This statue isn't meant to just honor Grandpa Bill, because every tribe across this state has their own Bill Franklin, a leader who fought to keep our cultures and traditions alive.
The statue replaces the one of Junipero Serra, the Catholic missionary who established the racist mission system, which enslaved and indoctrinated Native Americans in California, a form of genocide. again to Rango.
On July 4th, 2020, during the Black Lives Matter protests following the murder of George Floyd, the Father Ahuna Peracera statue that stood here since 1967 was toppled.
The state's only Native American lawmaker, James Ramos, then introduced legislation to replace the statue. It passed, and Governor Newsom signed it into law 1 year ago. Ramos commemorated the statue's unveiling.
Our people survived against great odds to be able to be here today, showing the resiliency of California's first people. That's why we're here today, to be able to unveil this monument.
Christina Onnestad, National Native News.
The Native American Development Council in Montana is hosting events for Native American Heritage Month. Yellowstone Public Radio's Orlinda Worthington attended a recent event in Billings and has this report.
On a chilly Montana morning, six Native Americans carrying tribal flags ran 2 miles to the Eagle Seeker Community Center in the middle of Billings. They came from each of the four directions. Tally Monto with the Native American Development Corporation shares the significance.
We believe that the four directions, it ties back to our creation story and how there were four brothers, carries all our prayers coming from those four directions, and then it helps tie us to Creator and the environment and the world surrounding us.
16-year-old Abilie Runzabove came from the east, representing the Northern Cheyenne, Grovant, Sioux, and Cree tribes.
It was really a powerful experience, and throughout the running, I was praying and wishing good thoughts for the new year, for like what I want to see come out of everybody.
NADC has events planned throughout November with the goal of bringing the diverse tribes in the state and non-Native Americans together.
We just want to celebrate who we are and express how proud we are as a people and really invite the outside community in and get this little glimpse and share our culture.
Leonard Smith is the CEO of the organization. He too feels the National Month of Recognition is an opportunity to find common ground among different cultures.
For me, it means unity among our tribes and having pride in our past, and then use it for the future of all of us.
In Billings, I'm Orlinda Worthington.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The National Young Farmers Association is calling on Congress to safeguard the nation's food security and slow global warming by investing in the next generation of farmers. Erica Lottis reports.
As Congress drafts the next farm bill, the National Young Farmers Coalition is calling on lawmakers to tackle climate disruptions and racial equity by investing in the next generation of the nation's food producers. Aaron Foster West with the coalition says in addition to the high cost of land, new farmers in Colorado and across the nation also find it difficult to access federal conservation funding. She says young farmers are ready to get to work.
Young farmers are already including conservation, climate mitigation, climate adaptation into their farms and their ranches. 83% of young farmers say that one of their farm's primary purpose is to engage in conservation.
In a 2022 survey of over 10,000 American farmers and ranchers, 88% of farmers under 40 attribute changes in weather patterns to climate change, and 73% say they have experienced at least one climate impact on their farm in the past year. Agriculture contributes 10% of the nation's climate pollution, but farms are also in a unique position to slow warming by eliminating methane emissions. The coalition hopes to right some of the wrongs experienced by farmers of color who have historically faced discriminatory practices, many of which removed them from their land. They're also urging Congress to extend funding for community-led farmland access, retention, and transition projects. West says current policies can help farmers access funding with some adjustments.
Change an existing program called the Environmental Quality Incentive Program that is run by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Make that so it could work better for small farms. There's some biases in that program. Most of the funding goes to larger farms.
If Congress doesn't invest in removing barriers and making space for new farmers, West says Americans will increasingly rely on food imports, sometimes from unstable regions. The nation's food security could be at risk when today's farmers retire.
The average age of farmers is about 60 right now, so it is a workforce that is aging, and there's not a workforce that's ready to step in.
This is Eric Galatis.
You You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, November 9th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff, Ken Jones, Eric Tegedoff, Eric Alatis, and Deborah Van Fleet. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for joining us. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth and the Global Citizen International Digest with Mel Gertoff, up next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertoff. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertoff, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. Is Hamas popular? Anti-Semitism on the rise in Europe and here. And women should stay at home in China. Is Hamas popular? The journal Foreign Affairs reports, Arab Barometer, a research network, conducted a survey in Gaza and the West Bank days before the